Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce a special episode of the show where we have the creative team behind the new Netflix science fiction show, Three Body Problem. And you might recognize some of their names. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss were the co-creators of the Game of Thrones show on HBO, and they are teaming up with Alexander Wu, who is their screenwriter and main narrative plotter for Three Body Problem. And it's a complicated story. It's adapted from a very popular science fiction novel. Essentially, there's a scientist who makes a pivotal decision back in the 1960s that has direct implications on a group of scientists in present day. And believe me when I tell you that that is basically the tip of the iceberg. When you are getting into the premise of the show and all the different places it's going to go, you do have an incredible cast who's working their way through it. And the showrunners who are talking about the complications and having the patience to sort of dole out a complicated and scientific story over the course of multiple episodes. I believe that Netflix is dropping this as a complete binge. And it's one of those types of shows that when you get to the end of one episode, it immediately propels you through to the next one. So Jake and I were able to sit down with all three of the guys when they brought the show to South by Southwest. And it's worth noting that we tried to limit most of the conversation to the first two episodes of the show, which is what they agreed to screen at South by Southwest. So you can go into this conversation and learn a bit about their process and their hopes for the show and how they sort of set it up without giving away any of the major things that are going to be going on over the course of the main run. So without further ado, let's dive right into our conversation on behalf of Three Body Problem with David Benioff, D.B. Weiss, and Alexander Wu.
Before we get going, can I geek out and show you guys one thing? Mm-hmm. Sean knows what I'm going to. This is my dog, Daenerys.
I just had to show you guys. And just
maybe don't show Amelia that.
I have.
Oh, and you
to
have.
The point where now she asks about her.
Really?
Yes, it is. Wow. It is a video I post on my Instagram every day. Oh, proudly.
Yes, he's very, very proud of that. I'm going to start with an easy icebreaker. Any of you guys can jump in and grab it if you want to. Do you guys believe in God? Or maybe Santa Claus. Maybe we can start with Santa Claus.
I do believe in aliens.
Okay.
As far as God goes, I grew up a believer, and these days I'm kind of, there's a line in Hamlet that I'm going to mangle, but one of you guys will get right, where he says the universe is stranger than is dreamt of in your philosophy, right?
Close. I was like, how long will it take Alex?
So I
Scripture correct. Universe, how long will Alex be able to resist?
What's the actual line? the thing is, I don't know the actual line, but it reminds me of like, because my wife.
There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
My wife said to me about a week or and a half ago, I love that this is going to be preserving posterity, because I'm so obsessive about details. She said, "You love pedantry, don't you?" And what I should have said,
I mean, pedantry,
was nothing, because that is the right thing.
I was going to say, I know exactly what you said,
but I couldn't resist. Pedantry. Unfortunately, she gave what her best approximation of a good-natured laugh at that, but
it only that? I mean, that one is too.
It only proved her. Correct. It only served to prove her point.
If she's gonna throw you, it's almost entrapment at that point.
Love pedantry.
So, getting back to the original question,
yes.
It's a really good question. I think the universe is strange. I don't think any of us really know what's going on out there,
sure.
And I certainly don't. But I do believe in aliens.
Good. I'll go with that then. Alex, I wanted to ask you specifically about, there's a unique challenge to this show in terms of having to early on educate the audience really quickly on a lot of big topics, but also tease out your reveals. I think one of the best things about this show, and I've watched the entire thing, is that you get to the end of an episode and it immediately compels you forward. Can you just talk about your process about plotting that out and making sure that you weren't overwhelming people with information and still having these narrative dramatic teases?
Boy, it's a big challenge that you know we spent the last 4 years iterating and reiterating on. But at the heart of it, what we want to do is to preserve that the spirit of the feeling of when you first read the book, which is always it starts off historical fiction. It's 1960s in China, and then suddenly you're in a murder mystery, and then before you know it, you're inside. You're thinking, well, I'm looking at the cover. This should be a science fiction novel. Where's the science fiction? And then you're 150 pages in. Oh, that's how it was there all the time, and having that feeling is something that we really wanted to translate, even if the details were not all going to be the same, just the necessity of adapting to a different medium. Not everything's going to be the same, but that experience of wonder and awe that we got that made us say, we have to adapt this book, is what you want the viewer to experience too when you're watching the show. And kind of always being a little just like, on the wrong foot is a key, and that's why it was important to us to start the show. Like, the book starts with something that doesn't seem at all like science fiction,
right?
At all,
yeah.
But also, there's the challenge of presenting a piece of history that doesn't get told very much at all, in a very succinct period of time. And a lot of the credit goes to our director Derek Tsang on that, who took painstaking detail to make every bit of that to honor that part of history. His family went through it, my family went through it, and interestingly, when we auditioned actresses to play the young Ye, a lot who are from China, we asked them, how much do you know about the Cultural Revolution? And
oh, wow.
They said, not really. Wow. They didn't really teach us much about it.
Yeah.
So it's not something that's taught a lot in China, and certainly not filmed a lot. So there was a great responsibility to tell that part responsibly too.
To open with, it's bold.
Yeah,
it's really bold.
Yeah. You mentioned the books. You guys have something in this situation that you didn't have on Game of Thrones, which is a complete series. Like, the books, the series is done. You had the last book. I'm just sort of curious how that changed your creative process, the difference between not having the final book written versus having the final book written.
Well, in the case of the specifics of the ending of this series, we knew that there was a finished trilogy, and so we're reading it, you're reading it. And as you get to the end of the trilogy, you're wondering where it's going. And without spoiling anything, we found the ending of the book so, just so moving. And I mean, and it's very strange, but like in a beautiful, kind of wondrous way. And so having that at the end of the story, it just became, I knew when I finished that last page and went over to him, his plane seat where he had finished the last page 10 minutes earlier, and we looked at each other before we even really said anything, we knew that we have to try to make this, because if you can get people to that point with characters that they love and care about, it's going to be a pretty amazing and an impactful way to go out of the series. So yeah, I mean, having an ending, not having an ending in general, I don't have much, that's a different question, but with this specific ending, we felt like it was extremely powerful and extremely worth devoting ourselves to many years of work on the show to get to that point.
I'm so glad I wasn't on that plane, because if I saw the two of you, and you're both reading the same book, and then in the middle of the flight, one of you went over and spoke to the other, I would just the whole time be like, what's going on? What's going on? Like, I would have been obnoxious on that flight. So be thankful that I wasn't there.
So the last time we went to Austin together on the flight back, and we've always been like slightly paranoid about, like people looking at over your computer screen, seeing what you're working on. The last time, do you remember this? We went to Austin, we were working on Thrones, the 7th season or the 8th season, whatever it was, and Dan was typing, and then a week or two later, this guy is on a podcast, and he's like, so I was sitting behind D.B. Weiss on a plane, and I happened to see what he was writing on.
Oh, no!
And it was like a comedian or something who was here for South By, yeah. And he went on a podcast and was like, and I saw the words I saw were, and so I was like, wow, we thought we were paranoid.
And after that, like, you have to watch, like, cuts of a show on the plane, so, and I had to finish a cut of the show between taking off and landing, because we were behind. But I'm in the middle, it was like the paranoid thriller. I'm like in the middle of this plane cabin wondering, the overwhelming likelihood is that nobody gave a shit. But like, you didn't know for sure, so I took the flight blanket and I put it over my head. I don't know what people...
Because they saw something illuminated under the blanket.
You could be doing anything.
I'm sure, actually, I was going to say I don't know what they thought I was watching. I'm pretty sure I know what they thought.
You know exactly what they thought.
There would be times where, yeah, even before that, we'd be working on an episode, we'd be watching an episode to make notes for the editor, and you see the person next to you. This is like early on, before we were worried about people like... you know, tweeting something. It was more, oh God, they think I'm watching a porn. No, it's actually a show on HBO. Yes, there's a lot of nudity. It's a fantasy show called Game of Thrones.
I don't want to focus on this too, but like, what was the scene that you were typing that the comedian saw? And was it like a big?
You know, I remember it happening, and I remember the feeling of like realizing that it had happened. I don't remember what.
That's
it was.
Insane. That's insane.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I want to get into the concept of virtual reality, which is an important component of this show. And I have boys, they're now 16 and 20. So over the years, I've seen them play with different variations of the technology. And whenever I watch them, I'm always like, this is ridiculous. Stop it. What are you doing? And then I put it on and it's so engrossing, right? Like, I can't get over it. So I want to know what you guys learned. Like, what did you do to explore it? And what did it teach you about what you can show and can't show?
Netflix was kind enough to invite us all to the Super Bowl. And at the Super Bowl, two rows in front of us, there was a guy with one of the Apple headsets on, standing up. And he was, you could see through he was watching the game, but I think he was also DJing. At the same time,
he was doing finger gestures.
He looked like he was like virtual DJing his own.
And how much is each Super Bowl ticket? Isn't like 10 grand for nosebleed?
I don't know, because
guy went there and used it to DJ.
Yeah.
To DJ.
And the first thing I thought was, this is the most ridiculous looking person I've ever seen.
Sure.
And the second thing I thought was, in 10 years, everybody's going to be this guy.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody's going to be DJing their way right down the street.
Yeah. Yeah. My girlfriend just watched Ready Player One for the first time, and we kind of looked and we're like, that's where we're heading.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just everyone living in those trailers.
But it is so obviously like a... There were some false starts along the way. I remember the promise of it, like, just kind of popped up it popped up in science fiction, like with the Neil Stephenson book, Snow Crash, and it was between that and The Matrix, the idea of virtual reality was around for a while, but then it didn't develop quite as quickly as people thought, and then people forgot about it for a while, but some people didn't, and they just kept working on it,
right.
And now they got it to the place where it is. I went to my son's, he's 15 now, but we went to a kid's birthday party, which is one of the VR like experiences, and you might feel silly with all that stuff on, but once you put the thing over your eyes and there are like zombies or whatever coming at you in a haunted house, it is immersive, even at the real low res version.
Sure. Yeah.
So what we were thinking, and it diverges from the book a bit this way, in this way, is we were thinking, well, if we want this to seem like something that came, that is connected with aliens who have are almost a higher power, going back to your God question, it can't look like the VR looks now, and it can't even really look like VR is going to look in 5 years, which is probably going to be pretty amazing.
Right.
It's got to look like something that's impossible. Mm-hmm. for any technology that we have now. It's got to be something that's just a direct sucking you out of your world into another world. So that really informed the way we conceived those sequences, the way we shot those sequences, made it a lot more complicated, because even a very high-end animated version, and some of the stuff that, if you look at like Love, Death, and Robots, some of the stuff they do on that show is really leading edge, like on the animation front in terms of the photoreal animation. But even that, if it looks like that, well, that's on TV now. The fact that it's on TV now meant that it was not nearly far enough along. So we went for kind of a hyper-real, reality instead of something that looked at all like a video game.
Do you mind me asking, do you guys use the volume at all, or was it traditional blue screen? Or
we talked about using the volume, and then we didn't use the volume. Do we use it at all?
We didn't use it. The lighting setup we used was an interactive lighting system that was much bigger than any volume. It filled the whole sound stage, but it wasn't. We weren't in a volume. You're capturing what is like on the screens in camera. This wasn't that. This was about creating like advanced, very precise interactive lighting effects for precise, specifically for three suns moving at the same time.
Okay.
Like to get that on the things and people you were shooting. It wasn't so much about like you were never actually looking at the stuff that was being projected.
Yeah, we got to visit the Mandalorian set before the show aired and saw the volume and were really impressed by it. Mm-hmm. And then when we started prepping the show, our VFX team, what we learned as we were researching it is you have to have the VFX done ahead of time if it's going to be projected on the screens. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky, and it really changes the whole process. And we kind of like the old way of doing it where you shoot something and then you're figuring out the VFX as you go after you have the footage. Mm-hmm. So I think both methods can work on different shows. For this one, the people we work with who are like Steve Kolbeck, who is our VFX czar all through starting with second season of Thrones, but all through the end of Thrones, you really wanted to do it this way. Mm-hmm. And what Steve says, we trust.
And that's every season is did, especially with this show, more than any show any of us have ever worked on. Every season, the requirements and demands of every season are different, and I could see there being things where, if we get another season of the show, I could see there being things next season, for instance, that would be very volume appropriate.
Oh, gotcha. Cool.
You know?
Gotcha.
Very cool.
But just the lead time and everything else, the workflow is completely different.
You got to get way out ahead of it if you're going to do it.
I didn't think about that. That's a good point. I read a story about this show, and I'd love to know if it's true, and if it is, I'm going to ask a follow-up question, but I read that we could have gotten this show sooner, but you guys were basically done with it, and then at the last minute said, wait, there's one more scene we have to do, and that scene happened, well, the idea, right before the strikes, and because of the strikes, it delayed the whole thing. I'm assuming you're nodding because it's true, because now my follow-up is going to be, what was the one scene that made you guys go, it's worth waiting to do this?
We would ask you, do you know what that scene is?
No.
Are you seeing the whole season or just the first?
I've seen seven episodes. Yeah.
All right. Five. Well, it's in there.
It's in the first episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it's not necessarily because it's not a bunch of whiz bang either. You know, it lays some foundational groundwork that we felt was missing.
I'm trying to think.
How was it?
I'm trying to think. Is it set in the 60s or is it set in present day?
Present day.
Is it the blinking sky?
No.
Blinking sky.
We're going to waste too much time.
It's going to be the rest of our
life. It was a scene in the bar with Jin and Augie. Where she first sees the countdown and they're discussing, where they tell you what they do
and interesting.
Okay. But it's a couple things that it does. One, it establishes the onset of the countdown, which is something that we had. Without that scene, we were meeting Augie in medias res, already experiencing the countdown. So that it gave us that, but also to explain what the problem is with science being broken, because Saul hints at that in the scene with Vera, that, you know, these things, it's impossible, but we're still not really entirely sure what that means. Right. And so we had this, you know, scene with Jin showing, you know, the experiment on the cell phone to Augie. And even if you don't necessarily know what those squiggles mean, which almost everyone in the world wouldn't know, the idea of two very brilliant people
looking
at
red.
This,
you know, started, squiggles start out
well,
like
it's red.
Blue.
Red is never good.
And then they turn red.
Right.
You know. So red means something's going wrong.
Right.
You
know, right.
Yeah. The phrase, "your bugs will haunt me for..." But I am curious, as a follow-up to that, like, how often do you guys get to the point where, like, you're about to put the period on it and it's done, and you go, shit, we gotta do this one last thing?
A lot.
That's often. A pretty common...
Yeah. I mean, with everything, with scripts, you know, like, before you shoot a scene, like, sometimes on set, you're changing lines of dialogue in the middle of a scene because you realize you're like, oh, she's saying the word celestial twice in two sentences. That's so stupid. That's so boring. Yeah. And you change it so that she's not repeating the same word. Or... as you're listening to something, you realize, like, well, that doesn't really make sense, or she wouldn't say it that way, or whatever it is. And sometimes, you know, you're writing for the voices in your head, and sometimes when you hear the actual voices saying something, you realize it doesn't sound quite right, so you make changes. Sometimes in post, when you're editing, you realize, like, this would have been better if he had said X, and then you get Benny Wong to come back and do ADR, and on the back of his head, you give him a new line.
Right,
so
right.
We were writing up until the very end, and then past the end, I'd say.
Wow. I want to ask about choosing your directors. I was surprised you guys didn't try to take on an episode. I don't want to find out why you didn't do that. But I was really happy to see Andrew Stanton's name brought back out of retirement, who I love. And I actually love his John Carter, and I want, you know, that to get more love. Can you talk about bringing him out of retirement and then also just explain why you guys didn't grab an episode?
I was just thinking of Andrew when you were talking about the VR headsets, because he has now one of the Apple ones, and he was telling us that he was watching Lawrence of Arabia
on
the 1,000-inch screen?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, like watching it, like you can choose the row at the Man's Chinese Theater that you want to sit in, and he's like, the sound is incredible, the visuals are incredible. He's like, I don't want one,
but you're making me like, I want to feel better than everyone else and make fun of the guy at this.
And then if it gets boring during Lawrence of Arabia, you can start DJing.
Peter O'Toole.
Andrew is someone who we've all admired for a long time. I've probably seen his movies, you know, it's weird because you think about how many times I've seen Wally or
Nemo.
Nemo, jeez. Yeah. Like, I have three kids, so I've watched
a movie that's going to outlive everyone in this room.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
All the Toy Stories, he's probably, there's been more hours of screen time of his movies shown in my house than any other filmmaker.
Most houses.
Yeah, most houses.
Yeah,
right.
Honestly.
We never thought there was a chance in the world he'd want to come play with us. And I think Alex brought
it was Alex's idea.
That's crazy. He had come to interview for my last show, and it didn't work out. But I always thought he's a really nice guy.
He's the nicest guy in the world.
Such a nice guy, and we had that episode 3, which was so heavy with the video game stuff,
right.
And you know, all the interviews with directors that we had. Everyone, to one extent or another, expressed some like, this is not something that I'm that comes to me instantaneously, like, I know exactly how to do this.
Sure.
You know, everyone was willing. Certainly everyone was willing, but, you know, and Andrew, of course, you know, was not intimidated at all by it, or at least, like, didn't give off that impression, you know, because we thought, like, okay, you know who...
He asked for it. He said, if there's one that I'd like to do, it's the one that everybody else who you'd been talking to at that point was kind of wary of.
No kidding,
like,
really?
I know what to do with this.
Wow, that's great. Wow. And can I ask why you guys didn't...
I think when you're doing a first season of a show, when you're show running a first season, there's so much work involved. There's so many meetings you have to attend, and you want to be on the set all the time for all your different directors. And because of the way the show is cross-boarded, and this is a Bernie Caulfield special, so you know, the show is cross-boarded. We have all the scripts done way ahead of time, and oftentimes there are two different directors working on the same day, and we wanted to be everywhere. We wanted to be in all the meetings. We want to be on all the sets. And what happens when you're directing an episode is you're not there for a lot of the other stuff. And if you're in a third season or a fourth season of a show, it's okay because you've got like a well-oiled machine and you can take that time and direct your own episode. But on a first season, we just did not think that was a good idea.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. This might be a bit of a silly question, but before I started watching the show, I didn't know what the term three-body problem meant. So I Googled it, and in the world of science, I learned that it's an unsolvable problem. They haven't figured out a solution. I'd love to know, what is your creative or professional three-body problem? What is a problem that you guys have been trying to crack a particular story, or how to shoot a particular moment, or what is the moment? What is your equivalent of a three-body problem?
That's a really good question.
I think Alex has a funny thought, because I see his eyes lit up when you asked that question. What is happening in your weird brain?
It's just my face. My face just does things that my brain doesn't realize it's doing. The thing I think of is, like, you know, there's as much art as craft in making a TV show, and if there was a formula, if there was a, you know, an equation that we could do and just plug it in, it would be so easy.
But then it wouldn't be good.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good, and it wouldn't work either. Every new project is its own kind of unsolvable equation. You have to figure out how to make this show work. So, you know, even though David and Dan had made Game of Thrones, not every lesson from Game of Thrones is applicable to this, you know. I've done shows that were adaptations of books. None of that is applicable to this. This is its own thing. So, you know, every time you're just starting almost like as a beginner again to, like, how do we tell this particular story?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking for a specific thing, there's in book three, there's a sequence that hopefully we'll get to if you know, the gods are good and we get to a season three of the show, which I can't understand. I don't know how to shoot it. I don't know how we would do it. It involves multiple dimensions. You know, how do you show three-dimensional creatures like us in a three-dimensional spaceship entering fourth-dimensional space? I don't know.
A problem for another day.
Yes.
Well, we're getting the wrap, guys. I wish we had more time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, hope you guys are really great.
Hope we hit you with some new questions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We want to thank our good friends at Netflix for getting those guys onto the show. I'll limit my conversations to this. I did get a chance to see all of the episodes of Three Body Problem, but I'm going to talk about the first two. And I want to let you guys know that this is the type of show that will reward your patience. There is a lot of story to set up, and the science fiction can be pretty in-depth. And there are a lot of characters you have to keep track of. It's a bit like Game of Thrones in that sense, where there are a number of threads that are happening at all different times. It makes it very clear where you are at any given point in the story, whether it's set in the past or in present day. That's easy enough to follow. But there are a lot of character motivations that you're just going to have to sort of go with and assume that the show is going to play it out a little bit later as the episodes progress. And without question, those payoffs arrive and are really worth your time. So if you put Three Body Problem on, give it the first two episodes at the very least, see how you feel, especially about the reveal at the end of episode two, and then decide whether you're going to go forward from that point on. Netflix is betting big on this one. They envision that if Benioff and Weiss and Alexander Rue want to keep going with this, they could get, I believe, three full seasons out of this series. And I hope that they do, because I'm intrigued by where they went with it. So you can start watching Netflix. You can watch Three Body Problem on Netflix beginning on March 21st. And in the meantime, we have plenty more content coming to the Real Blend podcast. So make sure you hit subscribe and turn on your notifications. You'll be the first ones to hear when a new episode drops. And as always, we appreciate you guys coming by to support the show.